This is the All About Symbian Insight podcast number 57. I'm Ewan Spence.
I'm Rafe Blanford.
And this is a very, very quiet start. I'm Steve Litchfield.
I'm sorry, I've kind of overdosed on Radio 4 this week. So I have this insane temptation to go, hello, I'm Charlotte Green. But that's probably just me.
Yeah, so Ewan's going to be doing received pronunciation in the Queen's English, I'm glad to say.
No, I'm not. Mind you, I do think that we have enough of that with, thankfully, Celebrity Big Brother finishing, the sort of things where people get up horribly early to stand in the rain to watch their favourite celebrities come out of a house in London. Meanwhile, Rafe has been getting up horribly early to go out of his house to stand outside a shop to see his favourite phone come out into the public. Isn't that true, Rafe?
In the rain.
That's absolutely spot on, Ewan. This morning, in fact, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get on a train to go to London to go to the Nokia flagship store in Regent Street. I wanted to get there nice and early. It was opening at 8 o'clock, and it was the UK launch of the Nokia 5800 Express Music, which of course we've talked about a lot on both the website and the podcast.
I've got a question here, because the 5800 we've had for a while and I've seen them around, but why is it only now that it's getting a UK launch? I mean, talk a little bit about Nokia's launch strategy here, going over all the countries.
So what they've done here is basically they launched in select markets on November the 27th, effectively the beginning of December. And they did that in Russia, Spain, Hong Kong, Singapore and a few other countries. But it was very limited availability. And the reason for that, I suspect, was partly a strategy to try and build excitement around the product and partly to get it out in some markets before Christmas. But they didn't have enough inventory available to sort of launch it globally. And actually, this normally happens with most Nokia products. It's just because the 5800 has been more anticipated than most that this has been more remarked upon. I mean, typically, something like the N79 will roll out in the Far East first, maybe then Europe, and only then later will go to America. So what we've had this time around is the launch in the UK. At the moment, it's actually only available in the flagship store and online in the Nokia online store, £249. It's going to be available next week on all the UK operators. And of course, it'll be from free on a contract and probably around the £20 contract. So I think that's the reason why we're seeing the renewed level of excitement. And for many people now, of course, it's old hat. But, you know, the UK launch is a big deal. And certainly they were making a bit of a PR event of it.
Did you buy one, Rafe?
Yes, I did buy one. I thought I'd go for
Nokia haven't sent us one for nothing in exchange for free, unbridled, uncritical advertising editorial.
No, we don't do that, Ewan.
Right, neither we do.
I mean, there were a couple of reasons for this. Partly I wanted to kind of have the full experience, and I'm kind of regretting that now, feeling a cold coming on, having stood in the rain for about an hour. Come back to that in a minute. But of course, yes, I've had a device on loan from Nokia, but that'll go back at some point. And actually, before it does, I'm going to sneak it up to Ewan, hopefully, so he can get his take on it. But I thought, this is the first touch device. It's obviously something we're going to be writing about a lot more on the site. So it'd be nice to own one. And, you know, if I'm going up there for the launch, I might as well go and buy one. And, they were giving away some extra goodies with the phone. So, for example, they've got some extra content in there in the form of a few films. They've got some applications, like, for example, there's the BBC iPlayer on it, sports tracker, a few games as well. They also gave away a free headset with the phone. It was the W8700, which is the Nokia stereo headset, sort of a nice quality with decent earbuds, you know, better than you tend to get in the box. They also gave you a £10 voucher for use in the Nokia music store, or rather 10 free tracks. You know, it's got a nice glittery surround on the box. And, you know, there's a bag and sort of it's all part of the experience. And what struck me was, you know, this is actually very unusual for Nokia to do this kind of thing. You know, this is the first time I can remember it being done on this scale. And I have to say, I was expecting the queue to be pretty small when I turned up. And I thought, well, you know, half an hour beforehand, I'll be fine. But when I arrived there, there were already about 80 people there. And that extended, I think, to probably about 150 people by the time the shop actually opened. And the people at the front of the queue had actually been there since 10 o'clock the previous night, and they'd been out in their sleeping bag and pop-up tent. And while, you know, there weren't that many there overnight, there were quite a few. And I think given the fact that it's actually available elsewhere online, if you look carefully, and, you know, we've got the credit crunch going on, and it was foul January British weather, lots of cold rain. I was really surprised by just how many people were there, but probably does rather underline the kind of the excitement and the anticipation around Nokia's first Touch S60 phone.
Yeah, I heard you mention there, Rafe, in the midst of a very large list of extras they were giving away with it, just not talking specifically about freebies here, but about things that are technically possible. You mentioned BBC iPlayer. That's exactly the same iPlayer widget as on the N96?
I haven't used it extensively, but as far as I know, this is actually it's a streaming only, so it doesn't do the download like it does on the N96. That's something we may see come along later. It's certainly the platform is capable of supporting it, but I'll give it a go and report back in due course.
Okay, thanks.
Now, the other thing that was interesting about the launch that we saw from your Twitter and Flickr stream, Rafe, was that Nokia were actually coming out to the queues before the store opened and were actually, you know, acknowledging that people were out here in the rain and giving them stuff there as well.
Yeah, I have to say, I can only be full of praise for the way the event was put on. You know, you actually felt like there was something of a atmosphere, even in the queue, and people, I mean, they were being typically British and stiff upper lipped about the weather. But one of the nice things, for example, they came round and they gave us a hand warmer. You know, the things with a sort of metal thing inside that you break and it sort of goes solid and white and warms up your hand. And of course, it was Nokia 5800 branded. So I've got it right now. So, and it's reusable. So that's a nice extra freebie. But they're also coming out and actually demoing the device to people who wanted to see it, letting you hold it and touch it, get a real feel for the device even before you walked into the store. And some of the slightly madder members of the staff were dancing along with, you know, 5800 playing music in their ears, and they did get some really funny looks from people passing by. And there was one tourist I saw looking off the top of a double-decker bus who nearly looked like he dropped his coffee down him or something. He was so surprised. Then when you actually got into the store itself, they had probably 50 or so units dotted around the front of the store for people to have a play with, so they could actually, you know, make sure they really did want to buy it. And there were plenty of staff on hand to demo with it, and they were all very friendly, and you know, I spoke to a couple of them and they were all very knowledgeable about the handset as well. They really knew their stuff, and given some of the experience you can have in UK mobile phone shops, I thought that's a great thing. And I have been in the flagship store before and not had the best experience, but they certainly got it absolutely right for this particular launch.
Yeah, I presume, Rafe, that given that you were live blogging and live photo blogging from a spot in the street in the pouring rain, that you were using your now waterproofed E71?
I was actually using the 5800 for the uploading the photos to Flickr, and I was twittering from, yes, the E71, and that was getting distinctly damp, but it seemed to think that it had nothing on being dropped into a stream. And so, yes, for those wondering, the E71 did survive being immersed in 6 foot of water for about 45 minutes and was going strong. And yes, I think it was even repelling water today.
What a lovely heartwarming story, at least hand-warming, as it were. Now, it's... Oh, come on! I thought that one on the spot. I thought that one was... Sorry, buddy. Yes, and now, thank you very much for that report from Rafe Blandford. And now, over to our financial desk and Steve Litchfield on and report on Nokia's annual figures published earlier in the week with their own commentary from their press office. Mr. Litchfield.
Yes, it's been interesting watching all the real giants of the tech industry releasing their figures over the last week or so. Apple, Sony, Microsoft, and of course Nokia. I think Apple's results were pretty good, and the rest of the companies rather more disappointing. Nokia's net sales, 13 billion euros. That's still pretty healthy, but down 19% year on year, up 3% sequentially. If you're following all that, there's the main interest is that 8 million N-series and 3 million E-series were sold in quarter four 2008. I think the E71's been doing quite well there. I think despite what Nokia call a difficult and deteriorating macroeconomic environment, I think Nokia have the cash reserves to get through all this. I think Apple obviously do as well, ditto Microsoft, some of these big companies. I mean, Sony are in real trouble for various other reasons, and in terms of Sony Ericsson as well. But I think Nokia have got more than enough momentum and inertia to get through this and come out the other side with bells on.
certainly what's interesting is that both Nokia and Apple have significant cash reserves, and it may be that as the recession kicks in and a lot of the Web 2.0 companies are going to be getting into trouble, there may be some acquisitions there. But what I know that a lot of people will be focusing on is Nokia's numbers were down and Apple's numbers were hugely up. And I think it's interesting that because of the way that Apple accounts for their ongoing cash that comes from the iPhone, they get a kickback from the network operators that come through month on month, that Apple can count those fees for 2 years worth, whereas Nokia's finances buy one phone, that's when it goes in the report. Apple have essentially, you know, a bite of the cherry every time they have a report with something like 13 million iPhones out there. So there is a reason for Apple to have that huge discrepancy compared to other companies such as Sony, who have to do massive restructuring in Japan and lay off a lot of Japanese workers, which goes very much against the culture of the company. Nokia, of course, is trading in Europe, and the euro is not performing particularly well at the moment. So, you know, it doesn't tell the full story here, because we are slightly comparing apples and oranges. From a financial point of view, Apple do appear stronger, but they have a much smaller base of devices that they can actually sell. Nokia's breadth may become more telling, especially low and medium tier devices, Q3, Q4, 2009.
Yeah, I think both of those points from Stephen Ewan are well made. Although I would emphasize, I actually think it's a mistake to do too much comparisons, especially Nokia, Apple, as Apple, you know, their mobile part is obviously a big part of what they do, but they're also still primarily a computer manufacturer. And, you know, you can read anything into one quarter's numbers. I mean, the iPhone sales were down something like 38%, but that's, you know, to say that is very meaningless, because it's a one product portfolio. And I think the point about cash reserves is also interesting, but actually, I think it's also in some ways largely irrelevant. What these companies need to be doing is looking at their strategy in terms of how they are then going to address themselves in the economic climate. And Nokia were talking about cutting their cost base in the devices and services division, for example, by I think something like 600 million euros. And that could well include a reduction in headcount. How that will happen remains to be seen. YLE, so the Finnish media group, was talking about as many as 10,000 to 13,000 Nokia redundancies, and how many of those would be organic through sort of natural wastage over the next 3 or 4 years. But, you know, you look at Sony Ericsson and Motorola, who are talking about cutting anything up to 50% of their headcount. So it's clearly a difficult time. But what was, I think, interesting for me from these particular set of results is, yes, the E-Series were doing strongly. Software and services, their revenue was up as well. But it was also some of the more general strategy points made by OPK and the CFO of Nokia, who were talking about their smartphone strategy. And here they were sort of saying that they're going to be increasing the investment on S60 relative to Series 40, and will be pushing S60 into new categories, new market segments, as well as driving it down the price chain. But also there was a very, very strong play on services and how they're going to become increasingly important. And Nokia's five services, which sit under the OV brand, will sort of combine with an expanding smartphone portfolio to what they called redefining the definition of smartphone. I think you can get caught up on the semantics there, but clearly it's showing how important services is. And it won't really be a surprise for any of us, either on this podcast or listening to it. But to have this kind of emphasis within something like a key Q4 earnings call does underline for everyone else just how serious Nokia is about this and how important they see it as a differentiator. And, you know, there's lots of questions about how much competition they have in that area, how well they're doing, whether they can deliver, of course. But that's clearly part of the way they may get through this economic period is, you know, you can deliver a lot of extra value through software and services, and the software costs, once you've developed things, are relatively low to add it to an extra device. That's one of the advantages, of course, of open platforms. So that's kind of what caught my attention. Nokia are, I would say, still facing some problems, particularly in terms of their market share has dipped slightly, and they're facing tough competition in low-end devices as other manufacturers are sort of looking to get rid of their inventory and cutting prices and cutting costs. But also in the smartphone, they're facing increasing competition from the likes of Apple and Android, RIM, of course, and Windows Mobile. And we've seen some commentators start to write them off. And I think, of course, that's grossly unfair because Nokia has a, you know, a roadmap for the future and there's a lot more to come. You know, yes, I think it's probably fair to say they, in the high-end consumer space, they have struggled against the iPhone, but we've got the N97 coming out later in the year and much more to come. But I think what a lot of the commentators miss is probably the breadth of Nokia's smartphone portfolio and the importance of having low-cost devices in the economic downturn, I don't think can really be understated. And so going back to the 5800 launch, I think that was kind of reflected in that, you know, people are very excited about this device because it is a mass market device that provides a sort of service functionality, but at a low cost, you know, similarly with the 63. And I think that's the way ahead. And that did come across quite strongly in the conference call, you know, around the earnings figures. So, you know, it is doom and gloom, but I think Nokia are probably better positioned than some. And you know, you look at the likes of Sony Ericsson, LG perhaps, and Motorola, which are all quite clearly suffering. You know, Samsung and Nokia have established themselves very well to sort of continue their sort of leadership in the mobile marketplace in 2009-2010.
No, thanks, Josh. I'll just pick you up on one thing there I wanted to comment on. I'm talking about the price positioning. It's very interesting listening to Apple's chat after their earnings call. And they were asked about whether they were going to produce an iPhone Nano or a cheaper version of the iPhone. And they basically said something along the lines of, look, we're in this market to make flagship products, high-end devices. That's what we do. And it's very evident here watching Nokia producing the 5800 and the E63 that, as you say, one of their key strategies for getting through the current situation is to produce devices that people can afford. So that, I think that's a very interesting differentiator.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the thing is about Apple is they're right to do what they're doing as well, because their brand is all about, in one sense, kind of the premium product. And to a certain extent, you know, Apple is about elitism, and that's part of their company DNA. So I think there would be a danger. I mean, there's also all kinds of technical issues around, you know, fragmenting the platform if they create smaller devices with smaller screen resolutions, and which is a reflection of the sort of immaturity of the iPhone platform and the software development kit. But actually, I think Apple are probably quite right to take that stance. And yes, it is in total contrast to Nokia, but you could also say sort of Nokia's desire to have openness throughout its platform, you know, everything from open source to the sort of, intention to open its service platform to third parties, is again, that's kind of the opposite of what Apple is doing in terms of having a very controlled experience. And both of them are equally valid. But I think the thing is, Nokia's is obviously orientated around the mass market. And that does perhaps mean it's less flexible and nimble in the high end, where Apple is able to, you know, behave in a much more fluid fashion, if you like. So it gives Apple an advantage there. But ultimately, you know, creating something for the whole market, for the mass market, is where the numbers are. And that's where the money is going to be in the future. And so Nokia is playing for the whole mobile market. Apple is just playing for a portion of it. Or at least that's how I see things at the moment.
Okay. You're listening to BBC Radio 4, and now we'd like to go across to our games correspondent, Mr. Ewan Spence. Are you there, Ewan?
I'm on Radio 4, finally, yes. Oh, sorry, I'm a BBC games thing, so I need to sound young and waggy. Right, yeah, listen, wicked, yeah, all the kids are coming out, they're getting all the classic games coming out on the N-Gage, we're getting this lovely game, we don't mind what it is. Enough of that. Yes, two new titles have been announced by Nokia for the N-Gage platform. Not actually available yet, just an update that they will be out at some point in the first half of 2009, in the case of Age of Empire 3, and with no fixed date as yet for Monopoly Here and Now World Edition. But it is nice to see that they're still trying to keep the PR truck going along. Age of Empires 3, for those of you not aware of it, is a real-time strategy game, whereas in previous games you would take turnabout one move, then everybody else takes move. RTS, you all move at exactly the same time, and it covers the period when Europe decided to take over the Americas, from about 1500 through to about the mid-1800 as well. Monopoly everybody should be familiar with. To be perfectly honest, I don't think there is a finer feeling in the world than building a hotel on Mayfair and having your opponent land on it on the very next throw of the dice. It is absolute nirvana. Whether we can have that feeling replicated through multiplayer either over the air or local multiplayer over Wi-Fi remains to be seen, but I would hope Nokia have considered this. This is, after all, a game that is pretty much designed to be played by between 2 and 6 players. You can have a good computer AI. I remember Steve Godfrey had one for the Scion. There's our obligatory mention this time around, which was actually commercialized by Scion and sold out as well. Just before that, we've had Asphalt 4 come out as well. This is a sequel, not surprisingly, to Asphalt 3, which was a sequel to Asphalt 2, which was a sequel to Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo. Normal racing game stuff in there. We'll have a full review of that up on All About Engage in the near future. It's nice to see that Engage are carrying on with the press and seeing what games are coming. What I'm missing is it used to be every Friday we would get another game. We had that for November and December for a period. Unfortunately, that's not carried through to January. And it's kind of left us, you know, in the wind, checking the pages. Something happened this week, and something happened, and something happened. And they've lost that regularity and comfort zone. And I hope they get that back later on in the year.
I do have a request, I think, for Monopoly. I want to be able to cheat, because as well as the Mayfair feeling, there's nothing more satisfying than ripping £100 off the bank while your opponent's gone to the loo or something like that. And of course, I also need to be able to modify the free parking rule so that when you land on free parking, you get all the money that's been stashed in the middle. So that's indeed my personal request for Monopoly. What about you, Steve? Have you got any?
I think I'm with you and wanting to see some really good multiplayer. There's a whole area. I've been playing with my daughter's Nintendo DS where you can do Wi-Fi multiplayer, for example, and it's just so much fun playing against other people. I remember how much fun I had with the N-Gage game Pro Series Golf. Playing against Rafe, being thrashed by Rafe.
You don't mean fun either. You just mean going, blah.
It's masochistic fun, yes. I wanted to mention Asphalt 4, though. I'm really hoping they'd put some effort into it in terms of the graphics. And I know I'm starting to sound like a broken record, but there's still no support for graphics acceleration on all the N95s and N82s and N95 8 gigs out there. And if anyone out there has seen an iPhone car racing game, and there's about 4 or 5 of them now that are really, really good, and they're silky smooth at about 30, 40, 50 frames a second, and photorealistic scenery almost in some of them. And things like Asphalt 4, you can see every single blocky pixel leaps out of the screen at you by comparison. N-Gage, they keep on releasing titles with no support whatsoever. Even a game that would display smoothly on a graphics accelerator device and degrade gracefully into a blocky graphics on a lesser device, that will be fine, but there's just no support for the whatever it is, the 20 million N95s out there, and the end result of games that just look awful, in my opinion.
Steve, I think you're just gonna have to be patient a bit longer. They are on the way, and you know, I do agree with you, so yeah, keep at it, Nokia, I think is the message there.
Actually, no, that's the wrong message, Rafe, I think. The whole, oh, it's coming. We've heard that for a long time now. You can argue about when the N-Gage Next Gen platform actually, you know, debuted. But it's been around downloadable for customers in some form now for approaching 14 months. And the answer, oh, it is coming, is not good enough now. People only have, you know, 30 seconds or a minute to decide if a game is any good. And because N-Gage is so much of a platform, rather than decide on one game and go, oh, it's a bit blocky, they'll go, the whole platform is blocky. Nokia shouldn't be going, oh, it's on its way, they should be doing it right now.
So you're turning into grumpy, impatient old men, basically.
What do you mean turning into? That's implying present tense.
Of course, I'm sorry. So Ewan, I know you played a lot of Monopoly, so have you got any particular feature requests on that?
I have, and it's actually quite a weird one. The rules of Monopoly say you don't have to have your money nicely stacked up and counted for your opponent. There's nothing wrong in hiding a £500 note under a pile of ones, for example. So you can, you know, that the sort of mental mind game, oh, I don't have a lot of money. Oh, no, I've actually got £1,000 underneath here, perfectly legitimate, because I never spent it yet. You can't do that in computer versions because they have a perfect ticker by the side that shows you exactly to the pound how much money somebody has. Come on.
Well, so why am I not surprised that Ewan wants to play mind games with his opposition? Anyway, staying with gaming, there's just one thing I think we should mention quickly. And this is something Steve's been trying out, and this is Doomtris. So, Steve, what's that?
Well, people will know about Python, of course. This sort of rapid
development.
This rapid development environment, as I was saying, for smartphones. And I've started out in Python for S60. If you may remember, if you've been watching the site about a year or two ago, I was one of the pioneers in introducing it to the wider market, if you like, and actually trying out some experimental programs. And I wrote a simple game. But I thought, as I wrote each part of the game, I thought, this is not really going to work for action games. I just don't think the language, the scripting is up to it in terms of being low level enough. And this guy who wrote Doomtris, if you want to look it up, Joomtris, as featured on the site, or Google for it, is a Tetris clone. Maybe I shouldn't call it Tetris. A Falling Blocks clone written entirely in Python and also open source. So you're going to see how he did it and what the source code looks like. So very, very impressive. It's a very playable, very, very playable Tetris clone. There's that word again. And all written in Python. So any would-be Python developers out there, if you want to see what can be done and how to do it, then this is not a bad place to start.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve. Well, I think that probably about does us for this week on the podcast. By the time we've topped and tailed this, no doubt would be around the 30-minute mark. But it's only remains...
Topping and tailing, by the way, is not some sort of masochistic practice, everybody. I just want to point that out for my mum.
I think it's fascinating how we started out, you and I started out comparing this podcast. I somehow slipped into comparing in the middle, and now Rafe's finishing it off. What a team effort, guys.
Oh, brilliant. It's the teamwork that counts. So
it's the perfect threesome.
It only remains for me to say thank you, everybody, for listening, and it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And it's a goodbye from him, Steve Litchfield.
And from him, Ewan Spence.